Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we are going to continue talking about some of the things going on in the macro environment. We've also got an update on Tesla's sales and production data from China for February, some pretty significant updates on Elon Musk's and Tesla's battle with the SEC, and a couple other items as well. A lot of volatility in the markets today with a lot of macro news coming out. We'll talk about those items in a second, but Tesla finishing up 2.5% on the day to $824.40 as the Nasdaq finished down 0.3%. After at one point this afternoon having been up about 2.5%, so steep drop to end the day. All right, let's start off with this macro news. We'll go through it pretty quickly, but we do have quite a few updates. We've got news from the US, European Union, Russia, Ukraine, and we also have a little bit more information on what's been going on with nickel pricing, as overnight that became even more crazy beyond the craziness that we had talked about yesterday. Starting off with the US, yesterday we had talked about the increasing probability of a US ban on Russian oil imports. Today, the White House announced that President Biden will be signing an executive order to ban the import of not only Russian oil, but also liquefied natural gas and coal to the United States. The US is also banning any new US investment in Russia's energy sector or any financing enabling foreign companies to invest in Russia's energy sector. Also important to note that the White House's release also talked about renewable energy and some of the concepts behind energy independence that we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks. Reads, quote, "In the long run, the way to avoid high gas prices is to speed up, not slow down, our transition to a clean energy future. We cannot drill our way out of dependence on a global commodity controlled in part by foreign nations and their leaders, including Putin. The only way to eliminate Putin's and every other producing country's ability to use oil as an economic weapon is to reduce our dependency on oil," end quote. Exactly. This is not a new concept. It's not a difficult concept to understand, but this whole situation is providing more political support for that concept and investment allocation that will change accordingly as well. So a bad situation, of course, but bad situations can often accelerate the changes that need to be made. As we move on to the update from the European Union, the theme is similar. So they announced today that they are seeking to reduce their dependence on Russian imports of natural gas by 2/3 by the end of this year. Part of that plan includes, of course, quote, "accelerating the rollout of renewables, both wind and solar, and heat pumps. For solar, the EU should accelerate the rollout of rooftop solar systems up to 15 terawatt hours this year," end quote. They also said, one that we're very familiar with here, "speeding up the permitting process associated with building renewables and making associated grid infrastructure improvements." I think I've said before on the permitting process, the intent there is obviously good, but I think in general they kind of miscalculate or underrepresent opportunity costs. And in a circumstance like this, those opportunity costs become much more visible. Again, all of this working to accelerate the transition to energy independence, and few companies benefit quite as much from that as Tesla will. All right, on the other side of the coin then, moving into the news from Russia, there are reports today that Russia is set to ban commodity exports to certain countries within the next couple of days. The Russian cabinet has been given 2 days by Putin to decide on a list of commodities as well as countries subject to that ban. So clearly today is a day of continued economic escalation. You've got bans on very important resources going up on both sides. This is going to continue to affect prices and volatility. So we'll see how those bans are structured. I think for Tesla, you've got a little bit of reprieve from that, hopefully, because of Giga Shanghai. Russia is certainly not going to stop trading with China, and I think it would be pretty difficult to impose any sort of ban directly on US companies operating in China, though I suppose that would technically be a possibility. But I wouldn't anticipate that. So hopefully if nickel, for example, or other important commodities for Tesla shows up on this list, it might not be quite as impactful as it may seem at first. The other update is from Ukraine, and this was from a President Zelensky interview with ABC News, and I think it's increasing a little bit of hope of de-escalation. Not sure that interpretation is entirely valid, but in regards to the question of Ukraine and their interest in joining NATO, President Zelensky said that, quote, "I have cooled down regarding this question a long time ago after we understood that NATO is not prepared to accept Ukraine," end quote. Now, presumably, if that has been the case for a while, then Russia's probably also had that information for a while as well. All right, lastly, on the macro environment then, just a quick follow-up on the nickel conversation that we had talked about yesterday. The pricing had jumped 90% yesterday. That continued overnight last night with nickel futures contracts again doubling, moving past $100,000 per metric ton. This caused a pretty strong reaction from the London Metals Exchange, which halted trading on these contracts and then actually canceled some of these trades as well. In the wake of this, Bloomberg had a pretty good article kind of explaining their take on the situation, and it's one that I would agree with. First, I'd highlight a point that echoes what we had talked about yesterday. Most of the trading of metals is happening outside of these exchanges under direct contracts, and certainly that's going to be the case for Tesla. So a price spike that is short-lived is very unlikely to have any impact at all on Tesla. Really, the only concern would be if it were to be persistent. So Bloomberg also notes that there are two classes of nickel, class one and class two. Class one is higher grade, and Russia is actually a bigger producer of that as a percentage. That class one nickel is eventually what is needed for electric vehicles. However, class two nickel can be refined to become class one nickel, and apparently above a price of $25,000 per metric ton, that equation starts to look very attractive for class two nickel, which helps create a bit of a ceiling on the price of class one nickel. So with that knowledge, plus the halting and canceling of trades by the London Metals Exchange, there starts to be a lot more evidence that this is more of a short squeeze situation than anything that would be persistent in terms of those prices long term. Now, that doesn't mean that it can't persist for a bit short term. Any sudden supply constraint is going to do that, but the market should eventually be able to react and get that to balance out. So hopefully that gives a little bit of peace of mind in terms of what's happening there with nickel. All right, getting into the Tesla specific news, we do have updated China Passenger Car Association numbers for Tesla in China for February. Most places are reporting on the retail, export, and then wholesale sales combining those two numbers, but I do also have the production information, so I want to start there. The CPCA says that Tesla produced a total of 55,308 vehicles in China in February, 32,324 Model Y, and 22,984 Model 3. If you remember us walking through expectations on this before, that number is on the higher end of those expectations, so a number that I am happy with. If we look at this in context of previous months, we can see that yes, this is down significantly from January's production of 68,000 vehicles. But remember, February already a shorter month, and then you have Chinese New Year there at the beginning of the month, causing some downtime. As we talked about during that period, Tesla did appear to have some limited production happening during that time. That makes it really tough for us to estimate exactly how much downtime there was. So my best guess here, as we look at daily production rates, is about 40% uptime during that period, or the equivalent of about 3 production days over that week. So if January had 31 days, February 24 days, you actually see that the Model 3 production rate would be pretty similar there, and then a slight increase in the Model Y production rate. And then in total, even though we do have less production here, there's actually more productivity, about 2,300 units per day versus about 2,200 from January. Now, obviously, that number will fluctuate a little bit depending on your downtime assumptions. If you assume more downtime, that means the productivity level was higher, or the opposite could obviously be true as well. But if this is somewhere in the ballpark, which I think it's probably pretty reasonable, then I think it's likely that those production rates in Shanghai continue to improve in February, which is really what we want to see. If that 2,300 per day number can carry into March, that would suggest production above 71,000 vehicles for March. That's without any improvement. We have continued to see improvements like we're likely seeing here in February. So a higher number, maybe something in the ballpark of 75,000, is certainly looking reasonable for March. So if we kind of look at how the quarter as a whole is shaping up, then first off, quarter to date, they've already produced 123,500 vehicles versus 112,500 vehicles at this point in the quarter in Q4. So production at this point already up 10% quarter to date. If we bring March in then and production rates roughly stay the same, again, we'd be looking at 71,000 plus, that would bring total production for Shanghai for the quarter up to about 195,000. And then depending on further production rate increases or a more favorable extrapolation base for February, 200,000 looks like it would be very much in the realm of possibility as well. Then of course, layer in Fremont, maybe another 125,000 there or so. That brings you in the ballpark of 325,000 or so. Now we'll do a little bit more detailed forecast of that before the quarter ends, but having this February production number, that brings confidence in any of those forecasts way up. Now, just to quickly touch on the sales numbers. So wholesale sales, which again, retail sales plus export. Yes, I know the name is annoying. 56,500. That is slightly down month over month. But again, that is very well explained by the stuff that we just talked about. I think the most interesting part of that is that we really didn't see much of an inventory drawdown, only about 1,000 more vehicles sold than produced, even though inventory grew by more than 8,000 vehicles in January. So what that means for March is that there is still inventory there that can add on to production. That'll lead to a huge increase in how sales look month over month, and it's likely Tesla should be able to break the record for wholesale sales from December, which was just below 71,000. If production could hit 75,000, it wouldn't be inconceivable for Tesla's wholesale sales to actually creep up to that 80,000 mark. Now, of course, some of that excitement would be diminished because we'll already at that point have Tesla's total deliveries worldwide since they'll report that for Q1 in the first couple of days of April. All right, next up today, we've got just a whole bunch of updates on the Elon Musk Tesla SEC court disputes. You can see here how many new filings there were today, how many new documents, and these are in some cases pretty lengthy. Sadly, that means that I haven't had the time to go through them all in the normal amount of detail that I would like to. We'll still hit the highlights, and a lot of this we have previously discussed with those back and forth letters. But Tesla today being much more specific, more aggressive in the language that they're using, really trying to build a case here. And the gist of it seems to be that Tesla and Elon are not happy with the settlement. They feel like the SEC has overstepped their bounds, that the settlement at the time was forced because of the risks that not settling presented to the business. So they would like to have that reviewed and the settlement to be terminated. I'll read just a small piece of one of these documents so you can kind of get a flavor of what Tesla is arguing here. So they say that, quote, "Plaintiff has litigated this case for nearly 3 years, taken numerous depositions, received hundreds of thousands of pages of documents, and now must contend with one basic truth. Elon Musk's August 7th, 2018 tweet informing the public that he was considering taking Tesla private was entirely truthful and cannot support the claims that plaintiff brings, much less a motion for summary judgment. Mr. Musk was considering taking Tesla private at $420 a share. Funding was secured. There was investor support. These conclusions are supported by extensive contemporaneous evidence, including discussions with Saudi Arabia's Sovereign Wealth Fund, the PIF, and Tesla's board, as well as the undisputed fact that there was sufficient funding for a go-private transaction from the PIF or otherwise. Plaintiff ignores all of this, ignores what Mr. Musk actually said and when, ignores what Mr. Musk truly believed, and instead creates strawman arguments that overlook large swaths of evidence adduced during discovery," end quote. So, like I said, getting more aggressive in their language, getting more detailed in terms of the case that they are making. They're actually providing evidence here. Some of that evidence is being redacted, so they are now getting into those finer details and that classified evidence. So this will likely be sticking around for a while. We'll continue to keep an eye on new developments there, and I'll try to take a look through and see anything else interesting from these documents. All right, last couple of things. We've got a few reports that Tesla is sending out emails to reservation holders for Model Y Performance in Germany, asking them to complete their profile in preparation for delivery, the expectation being that this would be for Giga Berlin made vehicles. Last thing for today then, TED 2022, so TED Talks, has announced their speaker list for this year from April 10th through April 14th, and Elon Musk does appear on that list. I don't believe Elon's exact time slot has been announced yet, but something to look forward to there. All right, that will wrap it up for today then. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And we'll see you tomorrow for the Wednesday, March 9th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.